Brian Barnier is a principal analyst and advisor at Value Bridge Advisors. We welcome him here today as one of us. He was an early writer about IT security risks in branch banking. He led teams to 9 U.S. patents and created a major telecom, the first enterprise-wide firewall team. He has served on a variety of professional guidance committees, such as those created for OSEG and ISACA frameworks on GRC, and the BITS Shared Assessment Program for service provider assessments, including cloud. He's here today not just to talk tech, but rather to bring us business insights from his work with CIOs, CFOs, attorneys, business leaders, and board of directors. For example, his most recent article just posted this week is online with Harvard Business Review. As part of his service for ISACA, many of his articles, podcasts, and videos are designed for us to share with our CIOs and business leaders to help us get more traction with those executives. He's penned over 100 articles, serves on the editorial panels of EDPAX, ISACA Journal, and the Association for Financial Professionals Risk newsletter, contributed to Risk Management in Finance, and is the author of the Operational Risk Handbook for Financial Companies. Welcome, Brian Barnier.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's delightful to be with you here today in your conference. I'm just amazed to see the way that this thing has grown over the number of years, and all of you out here today are just adding to the ranks of people that are swelling. Gary was keeping me apprised as the count went up and more were coming together. So this is just a fantastic opportunity to get together, to network, and in the follow-up meetings Gary was talking about, you know, the Honeypot Group and others, to find out what's going on out in the environment and what's happening there. And I can tell you, you really need to have conversations around your tables out there this morning. What's going on at your company share? If you haven't already traded business cards with everybody at the table, find out. Because I spent time with your bosses. And guess what? Your bosses are going to Chamber of Commerce meetings and others, and the CEO of the hospitals talking to the CEO of the manufacturing company. And if something funny is going on in IT land, they might mention it to each other across the same kind of coffee and donuts you're having now. And your CEO is going to come back, send a note to the CIO or your head of security, and it's going to flow down, and all of a sudden it's going to hit your desk. Now, you can either scramble to respond to it, or you can say, boss, I already know about it. I know that thing that happened at the hospital, the other business across town, and I'm ready to respond to it. And we've already done something, and this is what it is. And you're right there. You've got it nailed down. So that's one of the great values of being together in this kind of event. So that's terrific. But let me go on and try to paint a picture here of why we're together today and understand some of the security issues that are happening out there in the world. A friend of mine told me a story at his office building. He was doing a recording, and the young woman was sitting there, and she was recording certain phrases that would go into a piece of hardware that they were making that would be played back. And she was kind of nervous about these things. It's not like she volunteered for this job. Instead, she had been found because my friend's assistant had been running around with a voice analyzer, and her voice fit a certain Hertz pattern that they found desirable. And so all of a sudden, she found herself a recording star. And she was making these recordings. And she's sitting there, and she's making a recording, and she's looking up, and she says, did I do that okay? Was that all right? And she was a little on the nervous side. And the reason she was on a little bit of the nervous side, because she was recording things that said, like, incoming missile. Enemy at 2:00. Because what she was doing is she was making voice recordings that go inside helicopters that pilots are hearing in Afghanistan as surface-to-air missiles are being fired at them. And my friend's job, he works for one of the helicopter manufacturers, has been working with a team of fighter pilots to help them adapt to the terrain and adapt to the environment that they're finding in Afghanistan. And one of the reasons that they found this young lady with the Hertz recorder is because when you've got largely male pilots on adrenaline in a threat environment, our eyes and our ears start shutting down on us. And so you need to be able to connect through on certain frequencies to make a connection. Any of you are like runners or do, you know, physical activity where you push yourself hard? You notice that if you're listening to your iPod or whatever, you got to turn up the volume because as your body is very invested in what's going on, your senses diminish. And that's what was happening here with these helicopter pilots in Afghanistan, is that as they're under the pressure, especially the new ones that are coming over, they're finding themselves under the strain. So they're looking for certain women whose voices fit into certain Hertz patterns to communicate this. And her concern was that, what if I do this wrong? Somebody dies because of my recording. And then she was sitting back and she was worried, am I the last voice that he's going to hear? And all this comes to put a fine point on something we talk about all the time, that we live in a dynamic threat environment. Our world is constantly changing. And we're very used to our world constantly changing in terms of, okay, you know, what's the latest storm coming up? What's the new malware? What's the zero-day exploit coming along? But today I'm hoping to broaden your perspective in understanding that you're also living in a different world of business change, and that what we do as security professionals has to not only deal with the security change environment and that threat environment, but also in the context of what's going on in our businesses, our enterprises, whatever it is that we are trying to help achieve some set of objectives. Another pilot friend of mine, any pilots in the room here? I'm using a lot of aviation things offhand. So another pilot friend of mine was a fighter pilot trainer for the Air Force, and he came back and he got a Pentagon job. And he had sort of a techie interest, so they brought him back and they put him in charge of the group that was doing cyber terrorism countermeasures. And there he was sitting back and he was remarking to me one day about how similar his fighter training is to trying to deal with security issues. But he was also noting that a lot of what he's learned as a fighter pilot in terms of responding to dynamic threat environments is not something that was instilled in his IT cyber threat team quite the same way. And so one of the things that he was trying to do as, you know, a combat pilot with an IT interest put in charge of this group was to help share and build and instill these skills with them. And so again, as I'm looking at trying to help you at a professional gathering expand your backgrounds, expand your perceptions, and add more value in your environments, think about what's going on in different threat environments out there that you might encounter. Taking your kid to the swimming pool, crossing the street, driving here this morning, making a left-hand turn in the parking lot was an adventure in risk management. So these are the kinds of things that we've got to think about and want to understand what's going on in the world. Now, we're very good at dealing with some types of change, and we're less good at dealing with other types of change as we look at these dynamic environments. And it's not just change, but it's complexity of what's going on. Because risk management, in a way, is really pretty simple, as these fighter pilots have found out. It's one process that you're running through in your head over and over and over and over and over again to understand your capabilities in an environment that includes the capabilities of hostile parties. And they do it constantly and frequently in, and that's the simple part, in a very dynamic and changing environment. If your risk management process is complex or overwhelming, it's going to be much more difficult to deal with the complexity of the world because risk management is trying to sort out that complexity as we're trying to become more effective in what we're doing and more efficient in what we're doing. And that's sort of the challenge that I'll put to all of you today, is to think about how do you deal with change and how do you deal with complexity in order to be more effective in your environments and be able to make that contribution. So the question we start out with is, are you watching the trends to try to look at how we think and how we develop? Now, I did not know that Trend Micro was a sponsor of this event when I put this together. I walked in last night, told Gary, complete accident because they had a good graphic on their webpage. But what I pulled down here is a graphic that hopefully lots of you are familiar with. You probably get in your morning mail almost every day. And this is data that we're used to being able to take in, internalizing, looking at, and making evaluations of. Other people might want to see trend things, but you can think in charts and all kinds of stuff. But this is kind of data that you're used and comfortable with dealing with. But let's look at some other kind of data that's involved in your organizations that other people are looking at and ask yourself, are you quite as comfortable with this? Here's one that's looking at market data. Now, you might watch the evening news. You might be following your personal portfolio and your stock market online. So you see this kind of data and see what's happening in our environment here. And we say, how does this affect me and what I'm doing? and our ability to compete, to generate revenue, to be effective in our environment. Here's another one. This is about housing equity. We all know property values have gone down. But property values have other impacts as well. When you have lower property values, all those people who are using their homes in order to finance their businesses, how many folks are in small businesses here? All right? All of a sudden, that amount of money goes down, and therefore it's not available to invest in smaller businesses as equity. Because these, you know, small businesses bet their homes as part to guarantee their business activity. So that's an impact that carries through and has a consequence. We need to think about, what does this mean to us? What does this mean to our environment? Here's another one, industrial production. What does this mean? Any companies here, anybody here who works in a company who's been adversely affected by the recent financial crisis? Just a couple. Most of you guys are completely safe here in Cleveland, but just a couple. And then market share data. You're selling your products. How are you doing? Are you winning share? Share is much more important. If your total sales are going down, you're at least trying to win share, at least trying to take share over your competitors, so that as the economy comes back, then your pie can grow. But are you thinking in terms of this kind of data and how this impacts you as a security professional? So what's happening in your environment? Economic pressure, I already asked about. How about hands here for companies who are seeking new customers? Anybody like a new customer today? All right? How about, is your company launching new products in this environment? Are you doing new product? Raise your hand if you've got a new product launched in the last 6 months or planning one in the upcoming 6 months. How about this? Anybody going to go to a new geographic area in their environment? How about this one? Acquisitions, are you acquiring somebody, merging with somebody? These are business changes. And then how about anybody here, their CIO, sit back and say, we're doing this efficiency program? Or they just say, we're doing cost-cutting program? Or they just hand out the pink slips? Who's doing data center consolidation here? Data center consolidations? How about virtualization projects? Cloud? We had a lively discussion on that last night. How about shared services? People in shared services? I mean, all these are various types of initiatives to cut costs, but they also, going back to the earlier point, are dealing with change and complexity. By definition, they're changing things, and the more complex is your business environment, the more complex this change is going to be, and the more aggressive the technology vision, the more complex the change is going to be. Now, some of you may have a super sharp architect who's trying to get to a less complex future state, but the change process in order to get there is still going to be complex. Change and complexity are drivers of risk of all types, including security. And you, as a security professional, are in the middle of all these changes. So the question that should be going through your mind is, if any of those things were happening in your environment, how do they impact you? What email are you going to get that's going to say, go do X, Y, or Z because this is happening? I'll pick on somebody here, Scott. Scott gets the email and says, we're doing this acquisition. Scott's got to think, what am I going to do? Or are you already part of the team? Or do you already know that you're doing the team, or that you're doing some kind of deal? We got David over here. And that David's sitting back and seeing that there's this acquisition happening, but he hasn't been called yet, and he's running security. Would you like somebody to give you a call?
Yes.
Yes. Because he's going to get dragged into it eventually. Wouldn't it be nice to get pulled into it earlier and be involved and get some headlights into this thing? So all this change stuff creates opportunity for you to be more proactive in what you're doing rather than just waiting for that email to trickle down from the CEO or whatever's going on in your environment. And so as you're thinking about all kinds of technical skills that you're going to gather here in this conference, also think about how you're going to deal with them organizationally to make more of an impact into what you're doing so that you can drive value and you can get your projects approved and you can get the resources that you need to be successful. So to get a sense of the audience here today, and Gary and I have been talking about this, how many folks here are security practitioners out on the front lines of security, fighting the bad guys every day? The storm comes in, you're out there doing traces, trying to find out where they are. You're going to be at that honeypot meeting tonight. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Any science fiction fans here? Anybody here by chance, just for those 5 or 10 people that raise their hand, anybody ever heard of Star Trek? Know the difference between Star Trek and Star Wars? Anybody, there's this character that most of you probably don't know, Mr. Worf. He's this really big guy. Carries this batleth around. Mr. Worf, he's a security practitioner. So how many people are like him? You just can't wait to take your batleth and go off into battle. All right, frontline people. Now there's this other character on the show that you probably don't know. This is Commander Riker. Now, Commander Riker, he's got to sort of look across the organization, tie together these different pieces. And you can think of him as sort of like a security manager, if you will. He's got Mr. Worf out there, and he's got people in engineering, everybody looking at different kinds of risk issues. How many of you are in sort of that role? You're looking across risks, more managerial? How much of the audience is that group? So I need to know where to direct my comments here. All right? And then there's this other guy, he's bald. His name is Picard. And, you know, he likes the chase a little bit, but, you know, he's got to often do, like, the diplomatic things, and he's got to learn these other languages and learn how to bow and curtsy and all the stuff he's got to do to be diplomatic. Like, he's the guy that's got to go talk to the business, all right? So he's that broad-based IT risk manager that's out there talking to business line leaders and talking to the chief risk officer and the people back in that thing called the Federation. So how many people are in a job like that where you're really responsible for all the risks across and you're off having a broader risk conversation with your organization? Raise your hands for that one. Do we have anybody here? Okay, couple. All right, so it sounds like I'm going to be talking to the Mr. Worfs here mostly in this program. Is that right? So we've got this group here of people, and how many of you are looking to move into, of those who are Mr. Worfs, how many of you see yourself as a Riker or a Picard one day, and you're sort of planning your career move in that direction, right? So we got a whole bunch of people that are Mr. Worf now, and they just want to stay Mr. Worf. What a group. Gary, did you know this about your... They're just shy. So the thing that I want to know is when you're sitting there out there, all you Mr. Worfs or the Rikers or the Picards that are there, how do you describe the benefit of what you're doing to the business? Now think about this for a moment, a brief moment, because I'm going to put you on the spot. I need a volunteer to just tell me how they describe the benefit of security to, say, their CIO. What does it get you? Okay, let's go over here.
I would say that we, by managing risk, we prevent loss through loss of operations and continue to support operations and protect the intellectual property of the company. So on a day-to-day basis, we may not be bringing in money, but we're helping the rest of the company bring in money and avoid the financial risk of them being crippled.
Okay, so it's avoiding loss and avoiding the risk of being crippled, helping the company bring in money. Sound like a good answer? Okay, he's our first volunteer. That's Damien. Let's give Damien a round of applause here for that, okay? All right, who's the next one with an answer? Who's got another view? What are you doing in your organization? Okay, got two back here. This must be a very caffeine corner of the room here.
Yeah, I gave this answer last night. It's nothing bad happened yesterday. At least we think.
Nothing bad happened yesterday. All right.
Well, I was going to say, from a compliance perspective, you keep the devil out of jail.
All right. Out of jail. Nothing bad happened yesterday.
So there's two things we talk about. One is brand reputation and the organizational's market presence. So some of the things you pointed to. And the second, from a pragmatic standpoint, is the services from a security reduce what we call the hacker tax. So all the investment that goes into protecting the infrastructure, the people, the systems, resonate well with people in finance. When you start talking about reducing tax, they listen.
The hacker tax, I like that. Finance, reputation, this is good. So, and he sort of transitioned me to my next question, so thank you very much for that. And wanted to ask you, we were talking about CIO, but now talking more about finance. So if you're on the elevator with your chief financial officer or the president of a business line, he says, so what are you guys doing down in security there? What are you going to say? What's your answer to a business person?
We keep good people from making bad choices.
All right. That's nice and succinct. Good people from making bad choices. What else? Who do we got out there? What are you going to tell a business person? You're on the elevator. I'm ready to go.
You take steps to help protect the financial integrity of the organization. You're protecting your customers' confidential data.
Business people like money, he says. All right, confidential data, customer information. What else? Others? Who's actually written a business case that's going to a business person for approval for some improved security thing? Okay? So, all right, some of the same hands are going up here, right? So for those of you that have not been through that exercise, you got to think through what are you going to say, both in terms of these cases for initiatives that I just mentioned and in daily operations, which a number of you touched on. What I hope to do is to share with all of you some ways that you can expand your value a little bit more here when we think about these in this business terms in the context of what we're doing. So to give you a little bit of perspective on me so you can understand where I'm coming from, I have sort of four things you need to know about me. The first, as Gary mentioned, is I serve on a bunch of standards and practices committees around the world, developing governance, risk management, compliance. I used to do more security stuff, but I'm broadening broader risk management stuff these days to try to help connect the language and connect different roles together. So I deal with CFO organizations, legal organizations, security organizations, the ISACA, IT stuff, the Institute of Internal Auditors, all these people to try to help bring some harmony and connections across them. And through that, I hear comments and questions and concerns from people all over the world in a variety of different disciplines. In ISACA's Risk IT alone, how many of you here have downloaded Risk IT? Okay, not enough. ISACA.org/RiskIT. I'll show you that link later. Very good for making the business connection. Here's another one, security group. Who's downloaded BMIS, Business Model for Information Security? Couple. Okay, ISACA.org/BMIS. So here, we get back comments from people all over the world. On Risk IT alone, we had about 1,900 public comments. And so this is one way that I get to hear a lot of concerns that security and other kinds of risk professionals have. The second thing is by conversations with folks like you. And I've lost track of how many people I've been in front of in the last 12 months. I mean, maybe it's 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people or something like that. And I'll make the same promise to you that I do to everybody else. If you send me an email, I'll respond to it. It may take me 2 or 3 months when I'm in a big group like this, but I will respond to every email. And if you've got questions, I'm happy to answer them, because part of it is I learn on what's on your mind and what are your concerns, and I use that as to seed some of the articles that I'm writing to find out what our hot topics are. So that's another source of input. And then I do research with a colleague up at MIT on what's important in IT-related business risk management to both business and IT leaders. And I'll mention some of that in a little bit. And then it's this global perspective across industries, across countries, across professional disciplines. A lot of folks that spend their whole life doing, sort of one thing in one industry. You know, I grew up here in the Midwest, married in Toledo, taught at the University of Detroit, things like that. And, I could have stayed just in industrial manufacturing forever. But because I move around the globe and the country and everything else, I've been in a whole wide range of industries. And that brings a perspective that we've got here today and kind of what I'm trying to share with you to help you broaden yourselves in your professional development. Now, into this world of opportunity, we've got some complications and a bit of a paradox that arises. Because when I look at all the standards and practices stuff and all the teaching and all the research, I found out there's some things that are absolutely fantastic about security folks and their mentality and their background and the things that are difficult for them in the challenges they're trying to face. And these are just some of the things that come back to me on some of the surveys that are out there. Any big ones in your organization that I don't have on this chart? Challenges that you and your CIO and your business leaders are facing when it comes to risk management? A lot of challenges people face. So there's an opportunity, there's an environment out there, bad things happening. There is a situation where there's a lot of good things, opportunities to take advantage of. And yet, there's a lot of things getting in our way of making that happen. Now, some of those things getting out of our way are big environmental things, and some are closer and more specific to our organization. Some are inside of us. But all of them cost time and money. And when I go talk to all your bosses, I can certainly tell you they want to save time and money, And I can certainly tell you that they want a better, faster, cheaper mousetrap that helps them get the business results. As a number of you said, they're out there trying to drive revenue to look good to their customers. So when we look just here for this audience this morning, this group of you folks who are security folks and mostly the Mr. Worf types, one of the things that I find is that some of the things that make us the best are also the things that hold us back the most. How many sports fans are out there? You ever read a story about a sports player, you know, where the person, the commentators will sit back and say, you know, he was so good at X, and that became his downfall. You know, at one position, couldn't play, you need to expand out. And so here for security folks, that's the case too. When I look at the personality and the composition, yesterday I was down the way at Kent State, and we were talking about behavioral research and things that make up are in people's minds and that do risk management. And there's some things that make people really good in terms of their ability to deal with risk and also are their downfall. In security, we divide these into two categories, those things that are outside of us and those things that are inside of us, things that distract us and things that make it difficult for us to change as human beings. So when we look at security, there's two things to be concerned about. One is that security folks have a strong focus on let's go get the bad guy. Now, that's a good thing. Let's go get the bad guy. But at the same time, that can make things difficult because it distracts us a little bit. We're so focused on the bad guy, so focused on being Mr. Worf, that Commander Riker or Captain Picard has got to take him aside and have one of those little, you know, chats with him and sit back and say, remember the ship, remember your crew, remember the bigger picture. That's something that we're all vulnerable to. The other thing, as security folks, any technology people, we all get wrapped around in the toys. You know, we love the toys, and we love to do things with the different toys, and that can be a little bit distracting. I got this one friend of mine out in Los Angeles. He's a great security guy. I get lots of tips from him, and he's just got, like, every toy in the world. You know, there's very few presentations that I go to that I've actually, you know, seen something that I haven't heard before. I always go to Charlie's because he's always got a whole set of new open-source tools for, you know, hacking or finding out information or whatever. And he's got this, like, neighborhood challenge going. He says, well, I have a barbecue with you. I can break into your home network faster in a shorter time than it takes for the hamburger to cook. And so he's sitting there with people, you know, loading up their networks with security, and then he goes and he breaks into their network while they're cooking the burgers, just to show them, you know, your expectations about security are not necessarily what you think they are. And he has lots of fun with that. But if we look at toys too much, it distracts us back from the business and it distracts us from how do we add value in the organization. Now, let's look at the inside view. In the inside view, who's seen this movie? All right? So all this is about is Jason Bourne, one man against the world. I mean, it's ancient stoicism, for all those of you who remember that philosophy class from way back sometime you were forced to take in college. One man against the world. And security people, especially technology people to a lesser degree, are very much into, I want it to be me. I want to be that hero that's out there. And we just dive into the thing we're doing, our cyber world, and we're not connecting with other people the way we could have to be effective. And I see that over and over again when you go back and do incident analyses of where things dropped. Somebody had the information. It didn't get passed across time zones, divisions of the company, data centers, whatever it was. You didn't have that connection working quite the way you wanted it to be. And the other one is a certain tendency to sit back and say, let's reinvent the wheel. You know, I want to make my thing because it's really, really cool. I mean, I worked at some big technology companies, and I had a whole army of people who all wanted to invent their own thing. And as a person who was trying to coordinate across divisions and everything, I just couldn't make it work. I couldn't handle it. And I hated to sort of squash all this enthusiasm that was out there. But I said, guys, we cannot have 12 different flavors of the same thing and function as a group here. So we had to drive people to the same page and had to get more cooperation and coordination among folks. So things that are really good, like that creativity, that desire to build, that figure it out, can also be your downfall when you're doing things on your own and when you are reinventing the wheel. Ever see this in a movie? You know, you watch those those suspense movies like The Bourne Identity, where the person comes up, though, and by acting on their own, a crucial piece of information is not passed. Think of all the post 9/11 stories and all the other terrorism stories. You got to exchange information. And look at all the emphasis that's been placed on that in the security community. And yet we still struggle to make that happen. So we've got to be reminded of that. So, who's got little kids and you watch Disney movies? Anybody see The Incredibles? Okay, there's this little lady who's the superhero costume designer. And what does she say when Mr. Incredible wants a new costume and wants a cape on the back of it to be a hero? She says, "No capes! No capes!" And she goes into this rendition about how all these superheroes that had capes on their costumes met horrible deaths, like getting sucked into airplane engines, because they tried to put on capes and go it alone. And so that's what I'll often sit back and say when we look at organizations where we've got people trying to make these Herculean superhuman efforts, they get rewarded by putting on their capes. And yet that very behavior, the boss coming down and saying, "Hey, Kevin, what a great job you did. That was fantastic. You saved us all today." So what have I just done? Kevin wants to put on his cape again tomorrow. And it might work a couple more times until he gets sucked into the jet engine and takes the whole organization with him. Okay, so if you've got an organization that's got cape behavior and rewards cape behavior, that's a problem. You got to figure out how we're working here together as a team. And the other thing is when people go into isolation on their own, they're actually putting themselves into a cage that they can't get out of because they're building walls and silos and all that kind of stuff that's not helping us. So together, if you let these two behaviors go on where you've got sort of this, you know, cape go it alone kind of thing, and then you're reinventing the wheel and you're not reaching out for best practices, you get yourself into a situation where it's really damaging your ability to achieve business-driven security objectives. And you're tearing apart the organization. My wife looked at this slide. This is a tear in a jeans over the knee, by the way. She said, "That could look like something else." She says, "No, it's not a crack. Cracks kill, dear." But it's tearing apart the fabric of our ability to deliver good security within our organization. When we're distracted on one hand by bad guys and toys and we're not focused on business performance, and on the other hand, we're out there flying solo without a team and without relying on best practices, we can get in a lot of trouble. We've seen it happen over and over and over again. The gaps show up in not doing good process, not doing good tools and techniques, and not doing good metrics. I mean, how many years has it been since we've been trying to do process-driven security management? I mean, I started writing about that and speaking about that in like 2004, 2005. I go around and talk to CIOs about it, and it turned out they didn't have good process in their whole organization. Good business process management, weren't using COBIT and IDOL, and therefore they weren't able to step up to the plate in security. And yet I go out and I do surveys today about the number of people that are really doing process-driven security management, where everybody's connected and it's still relatively low. I mean, how many people would give yourself a 4 or 5 on the rating of security process management? Completely connected, you've got all that good COBIT and IDOL stuff implemented, right? It's been years to try to get to this point. And if we can't do something like that, that seems to make sense and has worked in a lot of other business contexts, we've got to wonder what is it that we need to change about ourselves, and that's why we need to challenge ourselves to find out what's difficult and how we make a difference. So based upon the analysis and research and all this kind of good stuff that I've done, I want to suggest just two pieces in sort of a way forward to try to make a difference. And there's lots more to this, but just focus on two things today. One are a few ideas or techniques or approaches to get more business focus around either security management or broader IT business-related risk management. Where that, I'm using that phrase to mean all types of IT-related risks to the business. So everything involved in being operationally stable, protected, recoverable, and available, or as well as to grab the project management risks and the investment risks. So as we go through this list, I want to encourage you with your little pieces of paper you've got in front of you, and Gary just walked through your booklets with you, make two lists, please, because you'll completely forget this by the time you get to the end of the conference. One are business actions that you can take to make a difference in your environment, and two are things that you can do to help your own personal and professional development in your organization to get more visibility and status and recognition, as well as to get home to your family more quickly and easily. So two lists. Start them now and write down what's relevant to you. We'll look first at business focus and a few tips here. And this comes from a whole program we do on making the transition from being a sort of a siloed business risk or security manager to a broader business aware risk manager. But just a little quick summary. First, going back to if we're talking about business focus, what does business focus mean? It means focus on strategy and initiatives like the ones I went through before. What are we trying to do to achieve revenue? Now, there's only a couple of you that when we went around the room, you talked about, you know, reducing loss and protecting against the bad things, staying out of jail and things like that. But the answers that really resonated with me were the things that we're talking about, revenue and profit. Revenue and profit. I mean, where is your salary coming from? It's coming from the fact that your organization sold something of value to somebody else, and that customer valued it enough to pay you more than it cost you to produce it. If not, they're going to go someplace else. So it's all about that value equation you're providing to customers. And yes, you know, protecting your information is part of it and all that sort of thing. But if you cannot provide that whole service to the customer in a more effective way, you're really missing out. And I'll suggest to you, and hopefully it'll be clear by the time we're done, that you missed a lot of great things that you could use in your business cases. That's why I want to encourage you to expand your view of the business here. Think more broadly. The first thing I encourage you to do is talk the T. Talk the T means we always, always, always start any kind of conversation we're having about security or broader risk management with some business process, some business activity that's relevant to producing something of value in the world. And that applies whether you're a for-profit or a non-profit organization, government, whatever the case is. What value are you giving to somebody? And you scope that process end to end. Very important to understand what that looks like so you're not doing little chopped up silos. And if you're having a conversation, you're having with some IT business liaison who's responsible for that whole area, and it may be a business unit, maybe a product group, it may be some business product process like supply chain, something like that. But you've got some notion of some productive process that's out there in the world producing value to which you are contributing in a very direct way. There are people that are involved in producing that. That's the next layer down. You can talk to executives about that because they can think about organizationally and teams and who's connected. Now, depending upon how tech savvy the executive is, they may be able to go to various degrees with you in this chain here. So sometimes they'll only think about the applications, but sometimes they can think more. Middleware, data, go down the whole line. The point of walking through this conversation with somebody is so they can understand their dependencies on information technology. And by understanding the dependency on information technology, they understand why you need IT management processes to make sure those things work. Those are like COBIT and IDLE type stuff. And that includes security. Right? I mean, you got a car. What if your complete dashboard went blank? That's your IT management processes. You got no idea how they're performing, what they're doing, all your monitoring's down. The engine's running now, but will it be in 2 seconds? So those IT management processes are really critical. When you walk through this with a business sponsor, and don't do this when you're bringing them the business case and saying spend money. You want to do this at the beginning when you're doing your risk analysis. You know, with a business IT liaison type person, that sort of thing. So they've got the big picture. Now walk them down. Now they're understanding your dependencies. When you come back a few weeks later with this is what we found and this is what we want you to spend money on, you'll have a much simpler time in the conversation. Believe me, it works like magic. Unless the person is very IT savvy in the first place and completely wrapped around security, this is a great way to get people to move from point A to point B. Second, we want to be able to cross the IT functions. Now, even within security, we've got our silos. I mean, I heard answers out there about the compliance perspective, some about the data perspective. We heard some about hackers and malware. I mean, those are different areas of security teams. And there's all these other areas of IT operations that are out there and that are all tied together to deliver that business product process thing that we talked about in talking the T. So you want to be able to go out there and team with those other people and find out how can we put together a more compelling, more powerful business case together to do all the things that are needed to manage risk to a particular business activity at an acceptable level. Do that as a team. And also then consider the range of threats. A lot of times we're very focused on the malicious. That's Mr. Worf running on with his bat lift. But remember, there's other kinds. There's all the accidental things, all the natural things. And then there's business activity things. You've seen the commercials on TV. We're coming into Thanksgiving now. You know, the transaction volume is going to go up. And can your security systems handle the higher transaction volumes? You know, all your network devices. I mean, this gets down pretty low-level stuff, you know? Can my scanner processor keep up? Can my email processor, dedicated processor keep up? Everything else. Capacity loading. But all those things are related to business activity issues. Now, when we're thinking about our threat issues, another way to view this, we talked about the CIA. And everybody in this room should know the CIA criteria, right? We've got them from NIST and elsewhere. But remember, that's only part of the story. That's A, very operationally focused, and B, it's very in the weeds focused. So that's why ISACA has long had these additional criteria that are part of it. All right? You want to look at efficiency and effectiveness. Wow, those are powerful words in your business case. Reliability, NES compliance. It's all out there and available to you, with the whole story behind it. Here's the three categories of risk management. From Risk IT, I mentioned these a minute before. This is our purple birthday cake. All of you Barney the Dinosaur fans, your kids will love this one. How's that going from Mr. Worf to Barney the Dinosaur? I don't know. But think about what your play as a security professional is in each one of those layers. When the investment decision is being made, where is security? When the program and project management is being done, where is security? And I mean more than application security. Think ahead, just like you would, you know, I grew up with the auto industry. Think ahead to your serviceability of whatever the heck it is that you're building. When somebody's making a business case in the first place, what kind of new security risks is this going to expose us to? If we're into customer sets or products or geographies we've never been before, how is our security threat environment going to be different? If you're not up there as part of the product team that's doing those investment cases, or one of your colleagues on your security team is, you're in the wrong place, folks. Because when I talk to CIOs about the most risk to their business, which one of those three layers do you think it's in? I've already tipped my hat a little bit. The top layer, the middle layer, the bottom layer. Hands for the bottom layer. Hands for the middle layer. Hands for the top layer. Why are the others of you not raising your hands? Have I scared you off? All right, on average, the most IT-related risk to the business is in the top layer. That average is going to go up the more complex the organization is, the more distributed the organization is. Complexity in either organizational design, that means distributed and all that, or IT infrastructure. All right? Now, the more simple the organization is, the less they're doing those things in the top two layers, and the more it's going to be at the bottom. But hopefully, what you took out of this is the thing is that everybody sort of sees the most risk in their own area, but if you sit back and look at the big organization, you realize there's other things going on. So when you talk to your CIO and say security needs money, realize your CIO is hearing, I need money from everybody else to deal with all these other risk issues. And figure out how you can play in that bigger picture and how you can add value. I already said this before. Business outcomes are what customers value. What do they give you money for? So think about what your value proposition is. Now, I'd encourage you to go over to somebody in your product management group or your marketing management group, or this gentleman over here was talking about reputation in the marketplace. Get the statement that describes your value proposition. It's a formal document that marketing people use. It's a three-part statement. For customers whom, it's a statement about who we're selling to, who need, a statement of what they're trying to buy, we offer in some differentiated way. Get that, pushpin it to your desk. Understand how it is you're providing value and what security's role is in doing it. If you've got a team, bring it up and talk about it in your team meeting and saying, what do we do to drive this value proposition? Because this is what's paying our salaries. And if the business is closed, we don't need security, you know, other than to protect the archived records. So do you know not only your value proposition, but do you know what your business leaders expect from the business, what your business leaders expect from IT, what your business leaders expect from IT risk management, that's the whole shebang across all the IT silos, and expect from security management? Is this crystal clear? Is there anybody in the room, after hearing me ask questions, who's willing to raise your hand and say you know completely the answers to all four of those questions? Now, the first answer you can take from lots of public documents that are out there. If you're a publicly traded company, it's published. Any company, a business or a nonprofit or a government, will have some statements that are published out there. Do you have them pushed pinned to your desk? A lot of people look at those as pure fluff. And by the way, some of them are. But here's how to tell the difference. Especially if your organization is big enough, find out what your senior managers are paid on. Find out what your whole management chain is paid on. What does their bonus rely on? They're going to go home to their spouse and say, oops, I missed my bonus. We don't get to go to Disney World. We don't get to buy the car. The kids don't get to go to college. All right, now you've got somebody's attention when you're at that level, and that is not fluff. Do you know what that is? Have this discussion with your team. If you don't know, you're in trouble. From the ISACA website, you can download a study done by Roger DeBrasini. He's a professor at the University of Hawaii, and he went and did detailed interviews at 56 organizations using the COBIT maturity model criteria. How many of you use COBIT here? Hands for that in your organizations? All right, how many do maturity evaluations? All right, guys, get your COBIT, get your maturity evaluations. It's one of the best ways to get people to see why you're valuable, is to have them go do those maturity things, say, wow, we're terrible on this. We got to give security more money. So when you walk through those, there's different criteria, you know, for like awareness and communication and tools and automation. One is for goal setting. The weakest criteria in 56 companies that Gary did detailed interviews with was in goal setting, which means people are doing a great job at the wrong thing. They're disconnected from their business. I cannot get to a CIO conference without having a quarter of the sessions all about business IT alignment. Your CIOs are struggling to do that. If you're coming in and saying, hey, boss, to your CISO, hey, boss, to your head of IT risk, hey, boss, to your CIO, and saying how you and your team are really trying to align to the business, that's going to make their job much easier. And they're going to be much more excited to have you come in their office, and when you ask for money, you're going to be much more credible. Be completely focused on what's going on, completely focused on what's going on, and tie back to all those big initiatives that I mentioned before. If there's a product launch happening, an acquisition happening, a geographic expansion, just be a bug delight to find out what's going on, what's changing, where are the risks, and what do I need to enable success in that project? And this is the answer that I was trying to hear from most of you before, is that you are enabling businesses to grow profitable revenue, but what you're doing to set up a more efficient, effective, flexible security arrangement so that when they want to launch a new product, when they want to go to a new area, security is ready to make that happen, and that you are not, like the rest of the IT, the boat anchor on the organization's profitability, but you're the thing that's enabling change. Here's ISACA's risk IT. Here, I showed you the purple birthday cake. Here's the other main diagram from that. How many of you have seen this one before? Okay, get it and download it. Get it and download it. Three main domains: risk governance, risk evaluation, risk response. This is unique in the planet. It is the only thing that crosses all the silos of IT risk and ties them back to enterprise-wide risk management. All right, it's not security-specific. It's not business continuity, disaster, availability. It's designed to knit all those together, and that's why there's mappings in here to map to those other areas. And we don't have time to talk about this today, so I'm just pointing you to this little video up here, and I'll give you another screenshot of that later on. It's a 6.5-minute video I did about how this works and how you can share it with your business folks. But look at what's right smack dab in the middle of this. Business objectives. What's the O in COBIT stand for when it used to stand for something? Anybody know? Objectives. We're trying to achieve business objectives. We're not doing security or audit or whatever for security's own sake, because we're trying to achieve a set of business objectives. Now, I asked you all about sort of what, you know, where your bosses were, what were they thinking, what value they want from you. Now, you have to get the specific answer in your organization so you can make an impact in your organization. But George Westman and I, George up at MIT and I, went and did a survey, the first of its kind. We looked at 158 business leaders, 100 IT leaders from around the world, and asked them a series of questions. Long study, wrote three papers on it. The most recent is ISACA's January, February 2010 risk issue. But they came back with four big things that good risk management is associated with that they're trying to achieve. avoiding negative incidents, managing costs, being aligned with the business, and supporting change in the business. At this point in our conversation, hopefully these things sound familiar to you. Now notice this. This is what they're asking for from IT Risk. The last three are absolutely pure business issues. So what do your bosses want from you? Just as a generic starting point, go to the survey and see. If you run into your boss on an elevator today in the hallway, you come back from the ISS conference, and say, what did you learn? You've got a couple of choices. You can either tell them about the latest thing you learned in malware or wireless intrusions or whatever the case is, or remember, you're talking to your boss, not a techie. You can tell them these four things. Which do you think will make your boss's heart warmer, especially if they're a business person? If you tell them that you're connected with things that they care about. So that was some tips on focusing more on business on the business performance issues that hopefully you can apply. The other piece here very quickly is calling for help to build a winning team. I mentioned already that it's not in the nature of the Jason Bournes in you, of the Lieutenant Worfs in you, to sit back and call for help to build a team. And yet how many horrible, tragic stories have we seen in security and real-life physical risk management where people have died because people did not team together and did not know when to call for help? So I'm begging and pleading you to call for help when you need it, and not just sort of in a generic, fuzzy way, but I'll give you a couple tips. First, call for the help you need by phase of activity you're in. Are you evaluating what to do? Are you planning on what to do? Are you implementing it? Or is it part of the operations or ongoing continual improvement? There's a whole guide ISACA has on continuously improving. The newest version I just did my editorial reviews on 2 weeks ago. It'll be coming out end of the year, beginning of next year. It's a fourth edition publication. Tons of stuff on improvement. But think about what you need. You may be fantastic. You may be the ultimate expert. Everybody in Cleveland and the planet may look at you for one of these areas, but I bet you you're not the expert in all of them. And you may not have it in your whole company. Or you may have it in your company, but you haven't invited the right person to the table because you don't know they're there. They're at some other office or data center or geography. Find out the skills that you've got in your organization and bring them to play by phase. Next, by audience. Find out who do you need to help you from those audiences in terms of sponsorship and support, and who do you need to help you communicate to those audiences? Because I know I can't do a great job in all audiences. I know I'm not great at everything. I maintain a whole list of top-of-the-world experts that I work with. Yesterday, I was asked my opinion on some GRC tools. And I said, you know what? I used to track that. It's gotten too complex for me. If you want the guy on the face of the planet that knows more about GRC tools and doing evaluations than anybody else, I don't say, oh, I'll do that for you. Give me a few bucks. I say, go see Michael Rasmussen in Wisconsin. He's the guy that knows. How many of you know Michael Rasmussen? Okay, a couple of you. He's the guy. If you're doing an evaluation of a product and you're trying to figure out what's most effective for you, go see Michael. I mean, she's got a whole long list of credentials. He invented the space when he was an analyst at Forrester. He's chair of the OSEG Technology Committee. I mean, you got to know the people to go to that can save you time and effort. And so I've had to force myself as a guy who wants to wear a cape to break out of that and to have some humility about what I don't know. I encourage you to do the same thing. Now, for rewards, shift, especially if you're in a Riker or Picard environment, and even if you're in another wharf, show you're changing. Stop rewarding the capes. Start rewarding the trophies for achieving the business outcomes. Who was on the team that launched the new product? Did they get their leather bomber jacket with the name of the product engraved across it or whatever, you know, team award they gave? You've got a Tiffin baseball shirt on, all right? Where's your baseball shirt? Where's your jersey for launching the new project on the West Coast or your expansion into China? That's what you want to have. Those are the kinds of rewards you're trying to drive around teaming and around getting help and around not reinventing the wheel. I can't emphasize this enough. The failures are rampant and tragic when people fail to do this. Anybody here, I've asked about Star Wars and Star Trek, and who's a fan of Crime Stopper shows? Any Crime Stopper shows? You like to watch CSI or Numbers or Bones or those sorts of things? All right, who watched Numbers in particular? Okay, very mathematical. Who are the math people in the room? Okay, you get into the numbers, you're the ones that are always doing the vulnerability scores and getting down there and computing your equations and your factor analysis. By the way, anybody here know Jack Jones? He's from Columbus. Okay, Jack, you developed the FAIR method, okay? Factor analysis and security. Again, I do factor analysis more broadly. I've done it for years, bring it out of my operational background. But if you're trying to do factor analysis and information security, go to Jack Jones and go to his website. He's the best. All right? Got to find those people. So I digress. So numbers. Guy who was a technical advisor of that show is my faculty member years ago, taught me, because I was doing some things in public safety and criminal analysis and investigations. He wrote this great book called Failures in Criminal Investigations. A lot of what's on numbers came from his work and came from that book. So if you're a Crime Stopper type, go get that book and read about how people died because security teams, in this case criminal investigators, through a series of errors, went out and were following poor Mike here because they thought he was the mass murderer. Mike wasn't. Mike was just fishing in his favorite fishing hole. He wasn't casing the joint. And yet the real guy got away or killed several more people before he got away. So these are highly trained people. And Kim's work led to the revisions of criminal investigation practices in the U.S., U.K., and Canada. And he's been to South Africa recently. I got an email from him. People who are really highly trained in doing this every day screw up, make mistakes, cost lives, don't do the same thing. It got a team together to make a difference. All right? So if we take this way forward that we talked about, we're trying to do performance focus and calling for help and teaming together and putting this together in a package, how do we do it? How do we make a difference with this? All right? There's a lot of challenges. Some of them are technical. Most of them are organizational. How do we get across? How do we make the bridge here from one to the other? We need a shift. We need to introduce a shift into our organization. And in listening to all the questions I got out there from folks, this is some of what I pulled together in this operational risk handbook, the lessons learned that I got from folks and how to make a difference with them. So we'll look here at just a little bitty snippet in risk evaluation and risk response to give you a few tips that come from other people. And one of the things I like to remind people of is that there are so many mistakes that are made in the world. I've made a bunch of them. Other people have made a bunch of them. When I'm sharing these things with you, all of these come from painful lessons learned. My plea to you, if you learn nothing else today, is don't make the same mistakes. Be creative. Make your own mistakes, but don't make the same ones. So let's look at a few mistakes and some simple ways to try to overcome them. So we've been looking at sort of some breezy stuff here, so just pause. I'm going to give you a little bit more intense material for a few minutes as we close up here. All right, number one. One of the reasons that a lot of people have trouble doing this risk management and connecting is because everybody's running around with a different framework, risk model, risk approach. I've helped develop a bunch of them, sat on committees. They're kind of complex, and they don't cross professional disciplines very well. Different areas of security, for example, or business continuity, disaster recovery, availability, not to mention the project management and everything. So one of the first things I did is I set out to do a simplified version that would include touch points from lots of different models so that everybody could sort of see themselves there, but it was something that was in common with people. So we start out with environment, evaluating the environment and the enterprise. This is, think about that helicopter pilot in Afghanistan. You got your environment, you got your capability of your helicopter, yourself, and your buddies, what's around you. The second thing we need to do is seek scenarios. Scenarios, how many people here do scenario analysis on a routine basis? Okay, that is the absolute heart of risk management. Okay, so kudos for you. What was your name again? Chuck. Okay, so Gary, Chuck gets something, you know, piece of candy, whatever, the big trophy. You got to have scenarios. If you're not doing scenario analysis, you're not doing risk-based security, risk-based anything. You've got to understand, did anybody hear the lines in the movie, I got to get into the mind of the enemy. I got to figure out what they're doing, you know? So you got to be able to understand the what-ifs. And in a very, very rigorous way, understand the what-ifs. If you don't understand the what-ifs, how can you possibly prepare for it? Whether you're a fireman, whether you're a Boy Scout. How many of you have been a Boy Scout or got a kid in the Boy Scouts? All right, be prepared, what-ifs. I mean, one of the things I do is teach first aid and CPR. It's all about what-ifs. So basic fundamental thing, if you're not doing it in security, you're missing a fundamental. Then we watch for warning signs. Once we understand how the scenarios can unfold, then we can sit back and say, what are the warning signs for those? Then we can prepare for them. And what do? We prioritize the kinds of things that could happen, and then that allows us to improve either our position in the environment and or our capabilities. It means we fly the helicopter out of harm's way, or we put another doodad on the helicopter to try to help us deal with, you know, incoming missile now. So the characteristics of this risk management cycle, it's very important. You've got to take a systems approach. That means everything's connected, like I mentioned before. You want to be sensitive to how fast things can unfold and what our options are to address them. Because the more we dawdle around, the more our options are foreclosed to take efficient and effective response to them. And we want to be able to focus on the business. I've said plenty of that. And importantly, it engages across the silos. You're using a method that brings other people in. This is not something that you do with your security buddies in your own conference room. You bring other people from IT and other people from the organization. That business process thing that I mentioned to you before and talk to T, bring them in and have the conversation. Now they understand what you're going through. Now they're much more receptive to your business case when it comes along and you're trying to make an improvement out there. So in risk evaluation, which is the orange side of this thing, here are some of the challenges that I see people talking about. This is a subset of the ones that were on the previous chart, or the earlier on. These are the kinds of challenges that are driving people and causing difficulties in their daily lives. So what kind of shifts need to be made here? How do we need to change when we're being self-reflective? First of all, switching from just a threat-based view of the bad guy out in the world there, the Borg, to our objectives. It's not just about the Borg. It's about we're trying to accomplish something out in space, and the Borg is in our way. What do we do? Second, we want to move from asset-based things, like worried about servers and storage and all that, that are important, and there are things that we've got to deal with inside of IT. But for dealing with the rest of the organization, we want to be out there and look at what's business process-based and get that focus. Next, of course, we want to cross the silos. And then we want to get away from this thing that we talk too much about events and incidents, these little micro things. That's not the real world. Real world is a bunch of cascading dominoes. And the real world situations unfold over time. You know, we get attacked in Europe, and then it comes to the U.S., and then it comes to Asia. Things unfold over time. And we've got to see those unfolding scenarios and situations, how things snowball. We've got to avoid the surprises and seeing what happened in the past and be able to move forward to make a difference there. We want to find out who knows now, not that somebody knew in the past that there was a problem, but we didn't find out. So you want to find out now. We want to move from just looking at the cause that's closest to us, you know, the last domino that fell, to looking at what started the chain of dominoes going from. Get away, as I mentioned, from checklists and move to scenarios, move to big approaches, because checklists largely have gaps and holes in them. And we all know lots of organizations that were perfectly checklist compliance and the bad thing happened in. And then we want to get out of training people in isolation and instead start training people in teams. You want to get together with groups like this one. We got Deborah and Stephanie and everybody around the table from different units and having them connect with each other, not just a couple of us going off to our one isolated training. So we go to the risk response side, the green piece there. Here are some of the challenges that we have. Some of them are similar, some of them are different. But get out of firefighting mode. We've got to prioritize improvements. We've got to differentiate the risk in different things. How are we going to deal with that? Well, here's a series of shifts that need to take place. We have to move from just looking at control deficiencies to looking at how we're actually responding to risks. Again, control deficiencies, artificial, checklist, limited view, risk response, real world, big picture, all the things that can happen. We want to go from just risk responses then over to business action and how we involve more people out just outside the security team that we can get involved with and engage in our organization. Heat maps and all this kind of stuff that's sort of high detail, we need to get into realistic, lifelike information that provides a deeper background and understanding. Go from just controls to governance and risk management processes more broadly. And from pitching problems when you're out there telling somebody you need money to really selling a solution to a business problem, the way you communicate. For those auditors in the room, going from findings to team-driven design, so you're designing solutions that are efficient and effective for the whole organization. I already talked about heroic acts, and the training in isolation comes back and applies again as well. Now, there's one more piece of this that we add into this loop, and that's when the bad thing happens, we need our reaction loop. We need our shortcut through the middle. So what can we do there to make a difference in this piece? Here are some of the issues that are out there, and in particular, things like being slow to react, not being prepared, and not focusing on how we can slow, contain, stop these kinds of events. A lot of coordination and communication issue. So we want to go from things where we're just looking at the last control flashing light to understanding scenarios so we've got deep understandings of what's happening here. We want to be able to go from just having data points to those unfolding scenarios. See how the scenario comes up over and over and over again? We want to go from these all hands on deck, big problem, to having a plan B in place where people know what their jobs are and know what to do, just like a fire drill. How do we get out of the building? Who's doing what? How do we understand how these pieces go together? And again, the training thing just becomes absolutely crucial in connecting people together and making a difference. So use the flow. Use the flow to make it easier to get this teaming going and to get this performance focus happening and easier for you to get traction. Just don't keep beating your head against the wall doing the same old, because we know from the questions we went through before, that's not been working for the last 5, 10, 20 years. We got to do something different. So here I want to close on just some thoughts for you with your personal action plan on what you can do. I asked you before about starting that list that you were working with and making a difference here. So first of all, remember the importance of what you're doing. You play a really important role. For some of you, there's lives involved. Others, it's livelihoods. But here's this one on lives that just came out. Do you want to be on this boat? This is an investigation report that was released from France last Friday. That boat was sliced in two. No, not by the Kraken, not by the sci-fi monster, but by this. Now, you can go online and you can read the story there or just look it up. But the big thing was the boat, this thing was zipping along at 37 knots in the dark, in the fog, without its foghorn running, because the captain thought, our engines are loud enough, people will hear that coming. They missed one boat by 100 meters, and then they sliced the other boat in two. Now, why did that happen? The investigative report was very interesting, because they were up in the deck discussing the virtues of Halle Berry in her Catwoman costume. They were also discussing what drugs can get out of your system most quickly before a drug test. So this is what's in the investigative report. And then livelihoods. When people screw up, especially in this environment, jobs can be lost. You've got to sit back, and it's not just about preventing loss. It's about how you and security can help your organizations grow profitable revenue so that you can reduce some of this. Everybody here that's got employed and collecting a paycheck can make a difference in this. And for those people that are here that are in transition, do not have a paycheck, we all want to help you be successful. So to take home, one, realize that some of your greatest strengths can be your weaknesses too. All right? For all you Mr. Wars, remember, there's a good side and a bad side here, and you've got to think these things through. And it's complicated by complexity and change of the real world. I encourage you, I beg with you, I plead with you after seeing this for years and years and years to consciously evaluate yourself, shift to that performance focus, to call for help and build the team and the skills that you need from wherever it is in your organization, and to act with urgency to make your personal difference, because over and over and over when I read these investigative reports like the boat one, somebody didn't act in time. Somebody knew and they didn't make a difference. Be the person who knows and makes a difference and acts in time to do that. Benefits to you, friends, family, and this is achievable. I've watched this stuff get done. I've watched it make a difference. I've done it. When I put together that firewall team that Gary mentioned, I was not in security. I was a product manager because I couldn't launch my telecommunications project because I couldn't get the darn firewalls to talk to each other across the team. This is over 10 years ago. So I, as a product manager with P&L responsibility, had to go build the team with the CISO to make this happen and reach out. And at first, the CISO thought I was, you know, why are you doing this? We don't need this. He finally got it. I cornered him in San Francisco at a meeting, and he said, okay, yeah, I get it. Okay, I'll do it. But that was the perspective that I brought to it, and I beg you all as security folks to come back and look at me as a product folk who was doing a security job. Anticipate my needs, be out there, because I will be your best friend, and I will write checks to help you if you're doing what drives my product. Because it's not just my paycheck, but every of my group's paycheck that rides on getting that product launch and driving revenue. So what path will you take? Will you wait for the bad thing to happen? Will you jump too quickly and sort of do the ready, fire, aim thing? Will you reinvent the wheel? Is it going to be you and your cape? Or something else? So make a list. What hurdles are keeping you from being more effective and efficient in your organization? How well can you take advantage of the mountain of best practices that are out there? And how quickly in your organization do you need to achieve benefits? Always talk in terms of time. The world will not wait for you. What role will you play in the fortunes of your organization and the people that are around you? Think about your action plan. What do you need to do differently? Right now, who are you going to call? Who are you going to text? We need to meet Monday morning. We need to meet Monday for lunch. What are we going to do differently? Make a difference and be passionate about that personal impact. There's lots of things that are available out there to help you do that. I mentioned before that one of the things that I do in my service to ISOC and other organizations is we create things that help you carry this message to others because we know this is difficult. And of course, you'll have forgotten this completely by the time the conference is done. But here's just two resources for you to use. First, this is the ISOCA.org Risk IT page that I mentioned. Highlighted in red is the video that I did. This video is designed to talk to CIOs and business people. It's about 6.5 minutes. They can watch it while having their tuna fish sandwich. Down on the bottom is a video here that's meant, it's from Urs Fischer, our committee chair in Switzerland. It's meant to be used for teams. It describes, you know, how does this thing work in a little bit more detail. Don't show that one to your bosses because they want to see the one on the top, the business relevance. And for the one on the bottom, make sure that you, well, those folks, the technical folks, can see both videos. And there's a whole series of articles here on the side, a number of which Urs and I wrote, to try to make a difference and help you communicate in business terms some of these things. And then here's the other one. This is brand new. This is this week, just a couple days ago. This is a Harvard Business Review article that I did on risk. So you can send that to a business leader. You can send that to a CIO. You can send that to a CFO and said, hey, I talked to this Brian guy, and I really realized we've got to figure out how to drive more business benefit out of our security management. So we're talking about how we can launch products and make initiatives and make things successful that big executives in our organization are all wrapped around. It's going to drive job creation and start the conversation and get things moving. We've done so much to try to help you. Please take advantage of it. And then lastly, measure your progress. How consistently you're doing change, how you're maturing in your objectives, and you guys have got to get with maturity models. There's so much information out there. Look at your team impact. Look at your business impact. And do you get home to your family earlier at your more soccer and football games? Just as a quick thing for your family, you can make two lists. I call them the shore and the boat list. The shore list says what are the objectives we're trying to sail for, and the boat list says who's in the boat with me helping me get there. If it's you and your boat and your cape, that's not a good answer. You want to think about who else cares about those business objectives and can help me reach them. What kind of team do I need to make to do it? And I always encourage you to continue your learning. You can send me an email. You can join the friends and family update list that I've got. You can see some of the things that I have coming out, the Twitter list, Twitter. And then the Risk IT page is again there for you. But lots of resources, things that are designed for all you ISOCA members. All this Risk IT stuff and everything was built with your dues. Take advantage of it. Make use of it to make a difference. So I hope you all have a terrific conference. I thank you for coming. And I hope that you'll take this sense of organizational urgency, combine it with all the great technical details you're getting, and make a fantastic difference in your own life and your organizations. Thank you very much.